I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thanks to Pete Medhurst for getting us up to date. He'll be back with you in about 30 with the latest and everything going on in sports. The big one at 1, driven by your local Honda dealer this fall. Find adventure in a new Honda. See your local Honda dealer today. We find Nikki Javala, who covers the Washington football team so well for the Washington Post, on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Nikki, you actually brought my attention today to the piece that Jason Wright, the new team president, wrote about the name change. And he gave a timeline, it sounds like, on when they would come out with a name, but not necessarily any clarity on when they would actually be operating with a logo and a name.
Right. Yeah, no, I think this has been the expectation all along. I know when it was first reported that they were going to retire the name and eventually settle on a new one, and you know, they put this interim name in place, they said this is, you know, a 12 to 18 month rebranding process. It takes time to go through the legal hurdles, the marketing, getting new merchandise. So it's not as simple as just, you know, choosing a name and everybody agreeing on it. It's much more complex than that, and it includes multiple departments. So, and I know they really want to get it right. I mean, it's a hard thing to do. You're not going to please everybody, but I think that's certainly the goal here.
Nikki, this is an unfair question, and I'm sorry to ask.
Wow. Let's go.
Here's the preamble, right? So I am a huge Jason Wright fan. I have been just so impressed with him since he's taken over on very short notice, trying to undo a lot of bad will over the course of years and years and years. And I've been impressed with other people before, both that have been in that role and other folks in the organization that haven't lasted very long. Do you get a sense this one's different, and they'll let Jason Wright do his job for more than 7 months, a la Brian LaFemina?
I mean, you certainly hope so, right? I think he's done a great job so far, and I agree with you. I think there's a certain way that he carries himself that, you know, and certainly in the way he speaks, his knowledge of both the game, the business side. I mean, his resume is phenomenal. So, yeah, you certainly hope that they'll give him the time he needs to really make the changes he wants. And I think, you know, the one thing that is possibly different than times past is it feels like the franchise is at the end of its rope, so to speak. Like, there's, you have to correct some of these things that have been going on. And I get the feeling anyway from afar that, you know, the staff they've put in place is really trying to do those things. So, yeah, you certainly hope that he'll be given the latitude and the time to make the changes that need to be made.
Nikki Javala of The Post on Grant and Danny. 3 games, and I guess more specifically 9 quarters of Kyle Allen since benching Dwayne Haskins. How does the Rivera decision look?
I mean, right now it looks good. I think it's every decision is going to have that knee-jerk reaction, you know, where it's, 1 week it's the craziest decision any coach can make, and the next decision it was, you know, the next week it appears brilliant. I think the key for this team, and this is something the players have stressed, the coaches have stressed, is you got to do it for more than one game. There's got to be some consistency for you to really feel like, okay, they're taking strides here. This is, they're really on a path to improving. And I think in some areas you have seen that. You know, you look at their third downs and some of the things they were able to get going in the run game and off on the offensive line, even with all the injuries. But it's such a small sample size still. And yes, I guess you have to factor in the fact that, you know, the Cowboys are what they are right now. But, you know, it's can you continue to build on that? But, it is nice to have that feeling of hope again that, you know, this franchise could really turn into something. And it is kind of crazy to think that they could get a playoff spot with the record. It's so weird. But, you know, once you're in, you're in.
Nika Jhabvala with us. The Washington Post covers the Washington football team for that fine periodical. Where are we at on Haskins? I mean, they're going to say the right thing, lip service, about how they're still, you know, developing him and they haven't given up. But they have. He's the third string guy. He's in street clothes on game day. He's as far away from playing. He's a little bit closer to playing than me, basically. A 41-year-old pudgy dude in his basement right now. That era is over. So what's going on with him at this stage? What's his mood like? What's he doing? What are the updates? What do we know?
I mean, I travel to road games. I'm fortunate in that regard. So we see him on the field a little bit. He, for the most part, stays pretty removed from the rest of the quarterbacks and the rest of the group. You know, you'll occasionally see him throwing with some of the rookie receivers or, you know, chatting up some of his former Ohio State teammates like Chase Young. But for the most part, it's been, you know, he hasn't really been the center of my attention anyway, just because there have been so many other things going on. But I think these next couple of weeks will kind of be important as far as, you know, what his future is with the team for at least, you know, the rest of the year with the trade deadline coming up. I mean, I haven't been told that they're shopping him. I wouldn't be surprised if they're fielding calls, but I just don't know that they'll get much in return. If they plan on moving on from him at some point and cutting him, then something's better than nothing. But I just have a hard time seeing teams giving up assets based on the body of work that he's had, and especially the body of work that he's had with a coach like Ron Rivera, who is well-regarded in the league as, a player's first coach and a developmental guy. I don't know. And this is not a knock on Dwayne. I feel like in some ways a lot of what's happened has kind of put kind of a negative spin on who Dwayne is. And I don't think that's necessarily accurate. Dwayne is by no means a bad guy or a troubled guy or anything like that. It just didn't work out at quarterback. So, you know, I think these next couple weeks will kind of show quite a bit. Sorry, I'm standing outside of school. That was a bad idea. I didn't know, like, there are still alarms going off. Jeez.
No problem. On Grant and Danny here on the Fan. All right, so let's get into the trade deadline. Give me a primer, if you will, and you can include Haskins if you'd like, of the players on this team that would be of any kind of interest. I mean, who could they actually move? Who would be considered an asset, do you think?
I think there are three names, and they've come up often. You know, I think probably Ryan Kerrigan has the most value. It's the question is, do they want to move on from him? I know they think he's an incredibly valuable piece in the locker room and on the line. I mean, he's had, what, three sacks?
Three sacks.
You know, yeah, and, like, very few snaps. So it's been pretty incredible. He's incredibly efficient still. You know, near 10, he's still playing like a starting pass rusher. That said, I don't know that being a starter is sustainable, as Jack Del Rio said, but you know, I still think he has a ton of value. Just the position he plays, the way he plays it, the way he handles himself, I think he probably has the most value. But then there's Ryan Anderson, pretty versatile guy on the line, has played linebacker, defensive end. I think he's another one that could have value. And then Dwayne, and, you know, he's still a wild card to me. But given, you know, given where they're at, had they lost that Cowboys game, I'd probably be more inclined to think that, you know, there's a better chance that Kerrigan has moved. And he could still very well be moved, but I just feel like given where they are, you know, to me it would make more sense to keep him at this point, but we'll see.
Are there any other kind of sneaky candidates, like someplace where they're deep, like a Tim Settle? They could turn a profit and sell them off for a mid-round pick. Or, you know, you mentioned Ryan Anderson. I mean, you know, the headliner obviously is Kerrigan, a great career with Washington, and that would, you know, obviously generate a lot of buzz. But is there somebody kind of mid-level that they could spin for a future asset?
I suppose you could with Tim Settle, but again, I don't know that you want to give up that depth on, you know, with where they are right now. I mean, they turned to Tim Settle, you know, quite a bit when Chase Young was hurt. If that happens again, you know, will you have somebody as ready? I think he's a piece that I would kind of lean toward keeping, but obviously not my call. But I, you know, honestly, outside of like those three, four, maybe if you include Settle, I don't know that the team has much to offer, really. I mean, had they lost that game, I just don't see any other spots where they could not only afford to lose somebody, but they would present another team with, you know, a player valuable enough for them to give up assets. So, typically a team with this record, or they're not really, you know, buyers at the deadline, but, you know, I do wonder if, you know, maybe they do look to add a veteran on offense. If there is one available they really like, there are some free agents too that they could try to sign for depth in the interim. But I'm curious what Ron's thinking is there, because, you know, you got to balance giving up assets, likely future draft picks, for talent now. But we'll see. I mean, to me right now, I feel like it's completely open.
I'm with you on Settle. He costs no money, and he's pretty effective. So that's the kind of guy I'm keeping. He's young, and you're rebuilding, and you want pieces. So he could be one of them. Thank you for the time. Good insight. We appreciate it, and we will chat soon, I'm sure, Nikki.
Thanks, Nikki.
All right, sounds good, guys. Thanks.
Be well. There's Nikki Javala of the Washington Post. Why don't we get into the deadline next? She mentioned a couple of those names, Kerrigan, Anderson. You brought up Settle, who's interesting, Haskins. Do you think they make a move or not? We can open up the AAA Always On Call listener line. The deadline is Election Day, which is a week from today. You're listening to The Fan. Want to get into the trade deadline, which is coming up in a week on Election Day with you here, Danny, and figure out who would be of interest on the market and who Washington could consider moving. Now, the big name is Ryan Kerrigan, which gets us to some pass rushing stats I looked up last night via PFF. So if you look at this key five group of guys right now leading the pass rushing charge, with Ioannidis now hurt and no longer around, here are your numbers on the season. Montez Sweat leads the team with 27 pressures, almost one more than anybody else. Chase Young has 14. Daron Payne has 14. John Allen has 15. And Ryan Kerrigan has 10. If you look at quarterback hits, Montez Sweat has 6. John Allen has a pair. Quarterback hurries, Sweat the most with 16. Allen has 12. Payne has 11, as does Chase Young. Kerrigan has 6. So in terms of just overall numbers, you go, man, Kerrigan only 6 hurries, 10 pressures. You know, he does have the 4 sacks, obviously. Well, how many times have they rushed the quarterback? Montez Sweat 164 times to Ryan Kerrigan's 53. Daron Payne, 191. John Allen, 162. Now, they're a different position, obviously. Chase Young on the outside, though, is the same position. 134 times to Kerrigan's 53. Well over twice as many times. And yet Kerrigan has 10 pressures to his 14 and 6 hurries to his 11. And it's not to say Young's not playing well. He is. But Kerrigan has been ultra efficient. And if you look at the percentage of the time he rushes, where he gets a pressure, a hurry, a sack, a hit, or something like that, it's been pretty incredible. He's got 4 sacks to Chase Young's 2.5, despite rushing 53 times on passing plays as opposed to 134. And I bring that up to say, you know, teams aren't just going to look at a sack total, or they're not just going to look and say, well, he's only got this many hurries. They're going to watch the film, number one, but they're going to look at the percentage of the time that he's impacted plays. And Kerrigan has been ultra effective in that regard. So the question is, what would they offer, and should Washington trade him? After beating Dallas, I'm with Nikki. I don't think they will trade Ryan Kerrigan. Had they have lost and they were 1-6, I think they would have been more open to trading pieces. But I don't think they ever would have traded Kerrigan. I think he's kind of Mr. Washington football team. He's a guy that they love in the locker room. They think it's important to have his leadership and to have him around as kind of a core dude that signifies the culture that they're trying to become more and more. So I don't think he was ever being traded, but I do think beating Dallas kind of cemented that he wouldn't. But I can't help but be really curious about what someone would offer for him.
Same here. I mean, the only slight disagreement I would have with Nicky's assessment is I don't think they were going to trade him anyway. This organization doesn't do that. They don't make that hard kind of choice where the guy's value is at its highest, even if it stings in the short term. You look at teams like Philadelphia who traded McNabb a year early instead of a year too late, or any of the other organizations that do it in a smart way, whether it's the Raiders now rebuilding. Miami went all in on a rebuild last year. This is the kind of thing that Washington doesn't do. They settle for good enough instead of trying to be great. So they were going to keep Kerrigan, I think, in my opinion, regardless, because of the factors you mentioned. And this isn't an indictment of Kerrigan. I love that guy. One of my favorite players ever. Just hyper-productive, great dude in the community, does a million things that people don't even know about, that he doesn't even seek fanfare for. He is one of my all-time Washington football players of the last couple decades because he's really good. He could fetch you something. And that's something that they should be interested in pursuing. But I don't think they would have, regardless of how the Dallas game went. It's impossible to prove, obviously.
Ryan Anderson is a lot easier to trade. He doesn't have some of that appeal that Kerrigan does in terms of the career here in Washington and what he means to the fan base and Football team. He's just a dude. People wouldn't recognize him if he was at the bar they were at. That having been said, he's really good at against the run. He's not a great pass rusher, and I can't expect that he's going to turn into one, but he does a good job against the run, but according to every metric and just based on when you watch games, seeing him, and that's why he does play almost as much as Kerrigan. If someone offered you something, I would trade him.
What's the minimum amount for you? Because I've struggled with that.
A seventh-round pick?
Really anything is where you're at?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, to me, when he's on the field and Kerrigan's not, I think that's a mistake, to be honest with you. I think Kerrigan's fine against the run and better against the pass. Now, if you were to lose two defensive edge rushers, then I think that hurts. Now all of a sudden I wish I had Ryan Kerrigan. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess a seventh-round pick doesn't really do me any good, to be honest with you. So maybe I wouldn't do it for that. But I would definitely do it for a sixth. I mean, what value? He is the fifth guy at that position when everything's right, pretty much.
Not much value there. And I'd like to see one of the other guys that's in that linebacking core that's kind of buried get a shot at that role. Not necessarily that they would be qualified to do it or otherwise, play somebody out of position. Let's see Sean Dion Hamilton on the field. They got a bunch of guys that are buried as part of this rotation. I know it's not apples to apples in terms of the position, but they got some young pieces. Khalik Hudson has barely played, for example. Let me see that.
But those guys, you just said this, so I'm just doubling down. I mean, they play a completely different position. So I don't – what's your comparison there?
I'm simply saying they got a lot of guys, young guys that aren't playing at all, right?
Right.
And you could say, hey, I know that they're putting Anderson as kind of a backup D end or, sort of part-time stand-up linebacker pass rusher when they go in certain packages. You've got bodies behind him that you could take a look at in different roles. And if they're not great, now you know that, right? But – to me, you've got bodies there, and he's not playing. He doesn't help you either way. I guess my point is it wouldn't be that big a loss if you moved on.
I didn't think they were going to move on from Haskins when we talked about this a little over a week ago, and it was two games ago. And Allen since then has played better. I mean, going into that conversation, the offense was coming off of its worst game of the year, and Alex Smith looked like he couldn't play, and they couldn't hold up in pass pro. And so they've been much better in the two games since, and now you're going to be 3 weeks closer to the end of the season, so there's a better chance you may not need Haskins. So I am more inclined to think that they could trade him. I just don't think they will. I don't think they're going to get anything for him right now that is all that much more better than what they would get this offseason. One development on the Haskins trade front that I thought about, and I have to give credit where it's due. This is someone in football that told me this. I didn't come up with this. But you and I were discussing the Josh Rosen second-round pick part of it, and I think I had brought up and was wrong on this when I basically said, well, Haskins has played more, and that's worse for trade value. My point I was making was his trade value is lowered because of the second season here where he's played. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were like, well, if he hadn't played at all, or if he played more, it could help his trade value. And I'm saying every game he plays hurts his trade value.
Yeah, it's not good. A bigger sample is not great for him right now.
Correct. But here's where I was wrong. What that person said, and this is actually really smart, they said, no, you're missing this. The reason Josh Rosen got a two was because you had more time on his rookie contract. That's the biggest asset of the deal, is that you're getting a rookie who's got X number of years on the cheap at a position where you have to pay these players, even if they're not good, a ton of money. Now, you're paying Case Keenum $8 or $9 million. You're paying fringe backups who are trying to prove their starters $20 million. You're paying good quarterbacks who aren't great $30 million. You're paying great quarterbacks close to $40 million. So the point is, Rosen was worth more because there was just more time left on his deal. Haskins is now in year two of that deal, so you're closer to having to pay him, essentially. He's not going to be paid unless something dramatic changes. But you understand the point. I had not thought of that, and it's a big, big, big deal when you start to debate between Rosen and Haskins and what you can get back.
Right, and we both said, I think to our credit, no way he's getting a second rounder. That was lightning in a bottle. That was regardless of
but my point was based on performance, and we were parsing up, like you were saying, well, he's not any worse than Josh Rosen. But I'm saying what we missed, and I'll just blame myself, we didn't mention, and I think it's the most important part. It's the rookie deal. It's the number of years on this contract where you get to not pay the quarterback. And you've seen this with other organizations. Seattle's defense is now terrible, partially because they pay Russell Wilson. Minnesota's defense is now terrible, partially because they pay Kirk Cousins. And somehow they have money to also pay two wide receivers and Dalvin Cook. I don't know what cap they have. It's pretty amazing. But, I mean, you see this all over the league. When you pay a quarterback, you know, it gets harder to do everything else. You have to pay quarterbacks. You don't have a choice. People act like you've got some choice and you can just roll with Case Keenum and win a Super Bowl. That's not what's going to happen. So I don't know. I just would bring up that the fact that he's now a year closer to the end, at the end of this season of his contract, hurts his value a ton.
And also took, by the way, Miami, who has 7,000 second-round picks and extra. Sure, second-rounder. That's nothing to us. Whereas like a team like Washington that didn't have a second-round pick this year, it would be like, please give us a two. Like, they would be so desperate for it. So, it took the perfect storm for that to happen. But that's a really good point, though, in terms of the value of the contract.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. Week 7 of the NFL season is in the books. We can look at some of the big storylines of some of the games. Didn't really recap the weekend's games yet. Some of what stood out to us as we continue on The Fan. The offensive line played a really good game against the Cowboys on Sunday, as we've done whenever we talk about anybody thriving. I feel like we've taken credit away immediately and said, well, it was Dallas, as if Washington is some juggernaut who got off the bus.
That's right.
Ready to go beat the Cowboys handily. But Cornelius Lucas did not allow a sack, hit, hurry, pressure, or have any penalties. Wes Schweitzer at left guard, no sacks, hits, or penalties. He had one hurry and one pressure allowed. Chase Roullier, clean sheet across the board. Brandon Scherff did allow a couple hurries and a couple pressures. Had the only penalty on the offensive line. And Morgan Moses, probably his worst game, certainly in about a month or so. I think he's had a really good season. He's playing through an injury, and he got more banged up this weekend. Gave up the only sack of the day from the offensive line standpoint. Zero hits, one hurry, two pressures for Morgan Moses. But you know, it's always interesting to me, and we'll see what happens as we continue here with who they play. You look at the Rams game as an example, and they gave up 1,000 sacks in that game when Alex Smith was in the game. I don't know how many there would have been if Kyle Allen was in the game. I'd assume there would have been like a 4 or 5 sack game. I don't think it would have been quite to the extent of what happened with Alex Smith. But all I can go off of is what's happening. So I'll be curious to see with the Giants again and then the Lions and the Bengals and whatever else. But it is always interesting to me how, you know, suddenly the offensive line sometimes start playing when you get a guy in there. We've seen this with Cousins and others in the past, who has a better feel for the offense. You know, where the ball's out quicker and before the snap has a little better understanding of what's going on, perhaps. And that's one of the reasons they made the change. And if you remember with the Griffin Cousins thing, it's like, well, the offensive line's better now. Okay, I guess. And to that point, for the record, I mean, Brandon Scherff has come back, so the personnel has actually improved a little bit. But they were without their left tackle and went to a backup in Cornelius Lucas this week, who played pretty well. But just something to monitor. You know, it's all part of this puzzle that we're trying to figure out. And Kyle Allen, they only threw the ball about he had 25 attempts. I think they probably had 30 pass plays in there on dropbacks. It was against a bad defense, but not a defense devoid of guys who can get to the quarterback with Everson Griffin and Alden Smith and Tank Lawrence, who's really, really good player. So something to track as we go forward here.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I think it all goes hand in hand, right? It's the quarterback obviously getting rid of the football, whether it's Sheriff or otherwise, guys blocking better, guys doing what they're assigned to do. The quickness of the passes, offensive coordinators can help with that as well. I mean, it's a full team organizational effort to get that done. So you're 100% right. It has been better over the last couple weeks.
All right, let's get into just a quick recap. And we'll see. Maybe this will be a terrible segment. I don't know. I want to go an inch deep and a mile wide with you here on every game, and we'll just run through them a sentence or two apiece on what we thought. Steelers 27-24 over the Titans. Pittsburgh was up huge. Tennessee came back. Pittsburgh held on. My takeaway from this game is that the Steelers are a lot better than the Titans. And I know that it was a three-point game, but I'll be right or wrong in a few weeks. I just think one of those teams is a championship contender. The other's pretty good.
At one point, 27-7, basically through three and a half quarters, Pittsburgh looked like the best team in the NFL. Tennessee came roaring back. They deserve credit for that. But you're right. That was a big feather in the cap for Pittsburgh.
The Lions beat the Falcons 23-22. Atlanta loses in the most
Amazing.
Excruciating ways. Todd Gurley tried to fall down at the one-yard line so he didn't score at the end of the game, accidentally fell into the end zone. Then the Lions got the ball back with about a minute left, and Matt Stafford, who's great in that situation, went and won the game on the throw at the final second. It was the funniest picture ever if you haven't seen it, Danny. There are defensive players all signaling touchdown, and Gurley's trying to plead that he didn't get in. I've never seen anything like it.
Weird. It reminds me, I can't remember who it was. Was it for the Eagles years ago? Brian Westbrook? I can't remember. But a fluky, bizarre play. And you're right. Atlanta just special. When it comes to whatever this is, Atlanta is a different animal, man. They are amazing at losing.
Browns, Bengals, beginning of the game, 0-for-5 with a pick. Mayfield's about to get benched. End of the game, 21 of his final 22 with 5 touchdowns. He was the toast of the town. They get to 5-2. They had to win this game. Joe Burrow, by the way, 400 yards passing. The Bengals drop back and throw it a lot, and he makes the most of those chances. But this, to me, was if Cleveland loses, they can kiss their chances of being a 9-10 win playoff team goodbye. And they rallied to their credit.
Yeah, this is kind of a cringe game. There's nothing that you would leave this game saying, I feel better about the Cleveland Browns if you're a Browns fan. They've gotten throttled by two good teams, and Cincinnati had them. Dead to rights at a couple points, it looked like, and they eke out a win against an opponent that is nowhere near where Cleveland is supposed to be. Not a great W, if there is such a thing.
Packers beat the Texans 35-20. Green Bay is 5-1. Great response after they got pummeled by Tampa Bay. They did not have Aaron Jones, who's their bell cow, and Jamal Williams rushed for 80 yards and a touchdown. Welcome back, Devontae Adams. 16 targets, 13 catches, 196 and a pair through the air.
He's so special. He's so good. You know where it's going. Everybody knows. When they drop back to pass, it's probably going to Devontae Adams. So maybe focus on him. Doesn't matter. The designs are good. Adams is so precise as a route runner. He's big. He's tall. He's fast. He's physical. He's strong. He is just excellent, man. What a day for him.
The Saints beat the Panthers 27-24. Carolina is the king of the cover. Like, they're never really threatening to win a lot of these games, but, man, do they stay close and stay in the mix, and they did that this weekend. Drew Brees has played really well over the last few weeks since everyone buried him, and nobody's really talking about that for some reason. I mean, he's not going to win any awards for how far he can throw the football. But
no.
I don't think in that offense he has to. That's always kind of been my point. They're 4-2. He threw for 287 and 2 touchdowns.
So the mess is this Michael Thomas situation, who is still out with an ankle, and then there was a suspension or disciplinary action.
About trading him?
That's what I was going to bring that up. That's what I saw for the first time is not that they're planning on it, but somebody did the thing where they wrote about it. And even if you get to that point, we're just like a handful of months removed from this dude setting every record for a wide receiver. Catches, yards, consecutive games with this or double-digit that. He was unbelievably uncoverable, and all of a sudden, he's persona non grata and everyone's mad at him. Weird. If he comes back, this is a different offense. It's transformative. He's that important. Kamara having a great season. And they need Michael Thomas to go with, you know, the likes of Tre'Quan Smith and Deontay Harris, whoever those guys are. Austin Carr, former power forward, I'm sure, in the NBA. He's not really, but you get the point of the dude's story. They need Thomas to get to where they want to go.
Yeah, I'm moving him. I don't buy that at all.
Yeah, no way, right?
Bills 18, Jets 10. This is the closest the Jets have played anybody. They came out and were game. Another bad game at quarterback for the Jets. Darnold threw for 120 and was intercepted twice. But the Bills are leaky. That 5-2, it's not quite Chicago ugly, but I loved them after about two or three games. And even though Josh Allen played really well this past week and threw for 330 completions in that game, they don't pass the smell test for me right now as far as contenders at the top of divisions.
Yeah, this is a bad operation all of a sudden here. Defensively, they're not good. Now, the Jets make your defensive stats look better, so it ended up looking fine. But all of a sudden, Buffalo's taken on water on that side of the football. And without John Brown, the numbers are huge for John Brown as a receiver, but he's like the deep threat. He's kind of their version of DeSean Jackson or whatever. Without him, all of a sudden, it's a little bit more dinking and dunking in precision, which is not really what Allen does well. He's there to make big plays and chew gum, and he's all out of gum. So when you make him dink and dunk, you get some good rushing totals, 61 yards on the ground this past week. And the numbers through the air were there, but some of those big play strikes, some of the wide open stuff, hasn't been there for Buffalo here in recent weeks.
Bucks 45-20 over the Raiders. Closer game than the score. I mean, Bucks poured it on with three touchdowns, or scores, I should say, in the fourth quarter of that game. Tom Brady, four touchdown passes, 370. He's in the MVP race all of a sudden.
Tampa's legit, man. This defense is really, really good. Vegas isn't bad. I keep saying this. They're not good yet. They're not ready for prime time, but they are not a pushover, okay? And this Tampa Bay offense is starting to hum. Again, I mentioned it. Gronkowski's getting healthier. Had an awesome old-school Gronk touchdown catch where he just out-muscled somebody, used those incredibly strong bear claws to catch a football. And that defense of Tampa Bay is really, really, really tough. They're good at every phase, all three, in terms of running the foot, of stopping the run, rushing the passer, and defending the pass. Offensively, they're starting to hum a little bit. This team is formidable.
Chiefs dominated the Broncos 43-16. Pat Mahomes held in check again. Snow game, 15 of 23 for a couple hundred yards. It's one of those games where the Chiefs could have kept adding points but didn't really need to, and so they didn't. Chad Henne came in and led a scoring drive in this game. Denver, Drew Locke was picked off twice in his 40 attempts without a touchdown. Curious about Lindsey versus Gordon in their backfield. Early in that game before he got hurt, it was a lot of Phil Lindsey over Melvin Gordon.
He just looks better. He's more explosive. He's faster. It just, I don't get what people don't like about Phillip Lindsey. You can't give him the ball 30 times a game. He'll end up hurt, I'm certain this one. But Kansas City's defense really came through in that snow game. Not much was needed from the offense, as you touched on.
Herbert, three touchdown passes as the Chargers beat the Jags 39-29. Jacksonville lost six straight.
Nice opening win. Cool. Now they're garbage. Their defense is a disgrace. There's a bunch of bad defenses this year, and theirs is sneaky, almost the worst.
Yeah, they're right there with Dallas. The 49ers beat the Patriots. They just beat the brakes off of them, 33-6. New England fans have not seen many of these. Like, this is a game that I've watched my team have 50 times in the last 20 years. They have not, so they don't know what to do with their arms. Cam Newton is horrendous. Like, no more talking about him and why didn't Ron Rivera go get him. People were doing that bit, by the way, after he benched Dwayne Haskins. Why didn't he get Cam? Because they'd, like, watched him have a decent game against Seattle in primetime. Since then, it's been 5 weeks and four games, I think, and during that time he had COVID. He hasn't played well at any point. Three picks. He has been, to say he's been bad is not fair to bad. Like, he has been whatever's worse than that.
New England's offense is in trouble. They don't have any answers. They don't have enough personnel. They don't have pieces. They don't have weapons. Julian Edelman comes off the field every 17 seconds and is always hurt. New England is in trouble.
And they don't have a quarterback, which is
there's that too.
Moderately significant. And then the overtime game, the Sunday Night Football Classic. The Cardinals beat the Seahawks 37-34. Seattle's first loss of the season. Arizona's got great wins like that and then some brutal losses like a Detroit game on their ledger. Kyler Murray can be up and down, but he was a blast to watch. 360 and three. Also rushed for 67. And Wilson didn't do anything, I don't think, to hurt his MVP chances, because even when he throws picks, the stories are things like the wide receiver chasing people down. Like, he makes boneheaded plays and no one cares. The analysis is always like, look at this hustle by this player, or, oh, Russ really tried to fit it in there. Terrible, terrible three throws on three interceptions for him that were costly in that game and never really came up on the broadcast.
Yeah, the Buda Baker one was really horrendous. What a fluttering, gross ball that was. But you're 100% right. Great win for Arizona. They needed that one. That was legit.
Those are some of your storylines from some of the games in Week 7 around the NFL. Big night in sports includes Game 6 of the World Series. We can get you a preview before we get out of here. Also hit the news that is broken while we were on the air today. And our leftovers next on Grant and Danny. Guys, if you like picking football games, you got a chance to win some cash doing it. You can beat me. You can beat other hosts from Entercom around the country. $1,000 are up for grabs every single week with the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. I had the Rams last night winning that game over the Bears. No point spreads, which is nice because I got the point spread part of that pick wrong last night. You don't have to worry about setting lineups. It's totally free to enter. There's no money you're putting into this. All you got to do is make your picks with Rocket Mortgage and our Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em, and you can win that $1,000 that's up for grabs every single week. The rules for this nationwide contest are available at radio.com/picks. Danny, why don't we start with some of the news of the day? The Ravens have brought in Dez Bryant to their practice squad. Based on the new rules with the practice squad during the COVID year, kind of a quirky deal where these veterans who have had great seasons end up on practice squads for a short time. I think, if you're asking me binary, he ends up helping them or he doesn't this year. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to catch passes, score touchdowns. I think he'll be a player for them come the playoffs. What about you?
I'm not as optimistic about his production level. I think he'll be on the field eventually. I don't know that he'll end up putting up numbers and stats at any point in time, but it is pretty amazing to see, man, just in the wasteland of you know, kind of the outskirts of the NFL, a lot of working out at high schools and local health clubs and sort of finding a field. The idea that this could even happen is pretty remarkable.
Antonio Brown's first day in Dallas with, his first day in Tampa Bay with the Bucs. Here's where I'm at on this. I will not be necessarily like rooting against Antonio Brown every time I see him. I now treat him like I treat anybody. If he makes a good play, cool. If he doesn't, great. I am frustrated that it seems like so few people care about his actions and the way he conducted himself. I think this is a societal issue, and I don't want to wax too poetic and get too deep here and go off the beaten path because that's where you get yourself in trouble. But we suffer too many fools. We allow too much nonsense. Decorum is going away. Decency is no longer expected. We can't do anything anymore, whether it's at the level of, you know, being at the gas station and opening a door for somebody or all the way up to the top in this country with any kind of decorum, and it bothers me. So the idea that Antonio Brown can act like a jackass and do whatever he wants and because he's talented keep getting opportunities, that's the way the world works. I'm not going to scream at the ocean and shake my fist and be mad that the waves keep crashing. He's back. Good for Tampa Bay. That's kind of all I got on that. I wish he wasn't in the league, but he is. So good luck to him and the Bucs. I hope they can figure out a way to keep him from being a malcontent in their locker room and ruining the opportunity that he's been given like he did in New England and in Oakland and in Pittsburgh.
I'm fascinated to see how it's going to work. I don't know. I don't know if there's enough, there are not enough footballs to make everybody happy. As it is now, I can't imagine you add Antonio Brown to that mix. That seems to be combustible. But it's one of those train wreck kind of things where I'm not going to be able to look away.
Are you surprised Tom Brady loves him as much as he does? Brady, yes. To me, seems like a guy that doesn't suffer fools. But what he really must be, honestly, at the end of the day, is just a guy that cares about winning championships.
Yeah, like, can you get open for me?
Everything else be damned. I don't care about anything other than, are we going to win on Sunday? And I'll make a deal with the devil if I have to. And I don't mean Brown specifically as much as kind of how he thinks. More on that tomorrow. I'm sure Chad will be talking about it. Chad Dukes versus the world.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.